Hey, everybody. Thanks for downloading You, Me, Them, Everybody. My name is Brandon Weatherby. The show you're about to listen to was recorded at the Kennedy Center, and that's a very nice thing that I'm able to say that it happened. We recorded the show at the Kennedy Center, and you could actually watch this show if you prefer to, instead of listening to it. Just a few plugs before the show begins. On Saturday, November 16th, You, Me, Them, Everybody will be recording live as part of the Hell Yes Fest at the New Movement Theater in New Orleans. So we're going to New Orleans this weekend, so come to that. The following Saturday, on Saturday, November 23rd, we'll be recording Holiday-ish Part 3, our annual holiday album, at the Creek in the Cave in New York City. It's actually in Long Island City. It's in New York City. It's fantastic. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's something like 20 comics all doing holiday-related stories, antidotes, etc. And then closing out the month on Friday, November 29th, we return finally to the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois. So in the next 3 weeks, we'll be in New Orleans, then New York City, then Chicago. And now, for your listening pleasure, here's You, Me, Them, Everybody live at the Kennedy Center.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Theater Lab for this evening's Millennium Stage presentation, brought to you by Target and the J. Willard and Alice S. Marriott Foundation. As a courtesy to this evening's artists and other audience members, we ask that you turn off your mobile devices at this time. Photography and recording of any kind during the performance is prohibited. The Millennium Stage presents a free performance at 6 p.m., 365 days a year. All of our performances are broadcast live and available on demand at www.kennedy-center.org. Now please welcome to the stage, Johnny Grave.
Spain. And I got a woman down in Houston, Bay, Lord, I got three in Spain. Well, I got a girl down in Texas, Bay, Lord, I'm scared to call her name. Woman don't love me, baby, no, she don't treat me like humankind. Oh, my woman don't love me, baby, no, she don't treat me like humankind. Well, I asked for what a mama loves, she bring me turpentine. Oh, well, now what you gonna do now, baby, when you find your best man rolled up and gone? Hey, well, now what you gonna do, baby, when you find your best man rolled up and gone? Sit on your bed and yes, you cry, baby, Lord, cry till he come home. Worried, baby, oh, and I won't be worried long. Well, I've been worried, mama, oh, and I won't be worried long. I'm gonna drink good whiskey right there, women's back home.
Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Grave, everybody. And welcome to You, Me, Them, everybody live at the Kennedy Center. Yay! Tonight's guests include author of You're Not Pretty Enough, Jennifer Tress, comedian Adam Friedland, the band Lenorable, co-host Stephanie Haas, and the house band Johnny Grave, of course. And I'm the announcer, Jamel Johnson. Yes. Now give it up for your host, who is not me, Brandon Weatherby!
Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Johnny Grave, everybody. Johnny Grave. Welcome to the Kennedy Center Theater Lab. My name is Brandon Weatherby. We are going to do a talk show, and it's going to be fun, and we're going to meet new friends, and we usually do this talk show in places that aren't nice like this. This is very odd for us. We're very, very happy to be here, but this is not the oddest room I've ever played to. The oddest room that I've ever played to was when I was 14 years old. I played to a wonderful room, a very warm room, a receptive room. I played to the Divine Infant Jesus Church, everybody. Give it up for church, everybody. So I played the role, very great crowd. I played the role of a criminal. Now, the Passion Play is a wonderful play. I recommend that everyone sees it towards Easter time. Now, the Passion Play is the story of Jesus getting hung on the cross. Now, I went to Catholic school for the duration of my academic career. Though I am not Catholic, doesn't matter. Very, very nice people. I was the only non-Catholic in the school. The only African-American gentleman in our class, his name is Anthony. Anthony and I played the criminals that were hung next to Jesus Christ. Jesus is a great friend of mine, really good friend of mine. He's actually getting married quite soon, and he had a six-pack at 14 years old. He's a very ripped gentleman. He got drafted by three baseball teams and said no to him to work in education. He actually might be Jesus Christ. So there's Jesus, there's Anthony, and there's me, and we walk the crowd with Jesus for about an hour in a church full of people, really nice people. At one point in the play, a very nice woman named Mary wipes the face of Jesus. People don't like Mary because she's friendly with other people. And I had a crush on Mary for the... I'm changing the names because we're recording this. I had a very, very big crush on Mary from the ages of 1 to 14. I'll explain why it ended quite soon. We get to the end. The end. I think everyone knows the ending of this play. I don't think I'm ruining anything. We are hung on a cross. We are hung on a cross because that's how the play must end in order for the act that is not seen to proceed. Mary was very kind enough to disrobe me, which was very cool in a way because I was 14 years old and I wore boxer shorts and it was awesome. Now, I'm not sure if you guys are big fans of MTV Unplugged circa 92, but I was, and I saw the LL Cool J Unplugged, and I was smart enough to know not to wear sticky deodorant so I didn't have those white stains. So I just smelled really bad, sweating a lot after walking those stations. And Mary puts me on the cross, and I feel Mary... We're at the Kennedy Center. I feel Mary do nice things for me on the cross, and I'm in front of the crowd. The crowd. I'm in front of the church. I'm in front of the church of 1,200 very nice people. Like I'm in a Creed video, and I'm just standing there with arms wide open, no access to my hands, feet are kind of bound, and I realize I'm wearing boxer shorts, and boxer shorts have a little slit in them. And I'm a proud man. And after you play a church of 1,200 people at 14 years old, and you've shown God in them everything... You can do pretty much whatever you want for the rest of your life, and you'll feel fine. It's totally worked out. Mary is currently married to a cop. I'm married to a journalist. I think that worked out better for me. I'm very happy. And now I have this talk show, and it's a fantastic talk show, and you're here, and it's going to be a fantastic time. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, for a really quick time, put your hands together for Johnny Grave while I walk about 10 feet to that desk. Johnny Grave, everybody. All right. This wonderful person that is sitting next to me, this is my co-host. Her name is Stephanie Haas.
Hello.
Stephanie, I agree with the four people that clap for Ms. Ha. She is a wonderful person, and I understand that you might not want to clap for her, but I think she deserves a claim. Now, anyways, Ms. Haas and I are friends because of this talk show. She is a wonderful stand-up comedian out of Chicago, but she did not grow up in Chicago like I did. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in rural Wisconsin.
Why?
Possibly Mayberry. I'm not...
What was it like growing up in Mayberry?
There was a lot of fishing. There was a lot of riding my bike around.
Where did you fish?
Where did I fish? There's a little fishing hole down by my house.
Did you actually fish in a fishing hole?
I mean, it wasn't a hole, but there was a little river that I could walk to.
That's nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're fishing. What else are you doing?
Fishing. I'm riding bikes with my friends during the summer. We're going to some good tree climbing spots, climbing as high as we can get. We're swinging around on branches. I would get a dollar every day from my parents during the summer to go to the drugstore and buy candy or baseball cards.
Did you grow up in 1955?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you do not look like you grew up in rural Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Oh. By the way, if anyone is offended that we're not you're not in Wisconsin, so don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. Now, we're friends due to stand-up comedy.
Yes.
Why are you a stand-up?
Because I grew up in Mayberry.
Perfect. Now, Jamel's our announcer. Jamel, you're a stand-up.
Yep.
How was it growing up for you?
It was pretty cool, dude. We used to hang out in the urban suburbs of Arlington, Virginia.
How close to Mayberry are the urban suburbs of Arlington, Virginia?
Arlington / Woodbridge, because I got to give them both cred. Woodbridge is in the house.
they're really showing their love of Woodbridge by their by their response.
How was it like? I mean, it was the same thing. Less fishing holes. Same amount of money spent on candy. More looking at girls' butts.
Now, Stephanie,
yep.
A lot of people might think that you also look at girls' butts.
No, yeah, I don't.
And that's interesting, I think.
I just like leather jackets and short hair.
Have you found a pomade product yet? We've had many discussions about pomade recently.
I haven't found a good pomade yet, no.
Jamel, do you have any recommendations for the perfect pomade for a stand-up comedian like
Stephanie
Haas?
There's only one pomade. It's the Orange Murray's can of pomade, and it's a lady and a dude, and they both have afros. And that's the only way I can describe it. I don't know where it's at. It's everywhere. Sally's Beauty Surprise, who's also sponsoring the program.
Give it up.
Give it up for Sally's Beauty Surprise.
Thank you, Sally's Beauty Surprise, providing all the pomade for this evening.
She's very funny. He's very funny. And our next performer is also very funny. But she is not a stand-up comedian. Comedian. She's not a comedian.
Because she's a comedian?
That's correct.
So, yeah.
She's actually a writer. And she's published this wonderful book called You're Not Pretty Enough. And when you see her, you'll think she's a liar.
She's a very beautiful woman.
Thank you. Okay, that's what I was... Wouldn't it be weird if I was like, well, she's really ugly? Anyways, she's coming to the stage right now, and she's going to do a reading for us, and then she's going to sit for an interview. Johnny's going to play her on. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for one of my favorite writers in Washington, D.C., Ms. Jennifer Truss, everybody. Jennifer, please come to the stage.
Hey, everyone. Well, most of us have had a crush on a celebrity, I think, at one point in our lives, right? Think back to that moment. Mine was John Bon Jovi. I was 15 or 16, and I saw that Shot Through the Heart video, and that was it. I was in love, like, immediately. Now, most kids would have been satisfied with just gathering their Tiger Beats and their Teen Beats, right, and listening to the music and going to the concerts. And I did those things, but I also did other things like stop dating for an entire year. And when people would ask why, I would say, because I'm saving myself for John. Like, they're the crazy ones. I thought, really, if, like, we just met, like, I believed this so deeply when I was 16, that if we just met, he would look into my eyes, and he would love me in the exact same way, and that would be it. We would, like, be off in our lives together, right? Anyway, I lived in a very small town from Ohio, and so I didn't have a lot of connections until... the biggest radio station out of Cleveland, Ohio, started broadcasting out of my very small hometown of Newberry, Ohio, in Geauga County. And I went up there on a dare one night, and I met one of the DJs, and he really took a shine to me and my, like, cause to meet John Bon Jovi. And so before they came to the concert, you know, in Cleveland, Ohio, he called me, and this was about 8 weeks before they were coming, and he called me and said, hey, good news. we're sponsoring the contest. So we're going to take these contest winners in a limo, and you can come with me, and we're going to go backstage and meet the band. Is that okay with you? And I was like, that's totally fine. And my mom approved me going with a stranger because she said, you have to get me tickets too. So my mom was waiting for me, and I take you to an excerpt of that story from that point. Operation Make John Fall in Love with Me included the following steps. Lose 7 pounds. Find the perfect outfit. Identify all the different scenarios that could occur, and then determine and practice a response to all those scenarios. Step one would be easy. I'd just skip the cafeteria pizza and do some of my mom's Jane Fonda tapes. Step two required an inventory of my closet. Nothing outfit-wise struck me as just right, but I did have a white leather jacket that fit me perfectly and a pair of low but sexy white pumps. I just needed a dress. A trip to the mall would fix that, and I found a light pink sleeveless number that went down to my knees and hugged my curves. Done. For the last two steps, I would need to imagine all of the possible ways that John would act. If he was cocky, I imagined myself saying, think of all the fans who supported you. Without you, we'd be nothing. You'd be nothing. I couldn't really imagine him being anything else but lovely, but one had to prepare. I practiced my responses in the mirror until I felt I was ready, and then the day came. I got dressed, teased my long, permed, frosted hair to the sky. I have to tell you, from the neck up, I actually really looked like John Bon Jovi. Like, a lot. Like, I had that hair and everything. And I stepped out and entered the limo as an 80s goddess. The contest winners, who were two female friends in their 20s, and they were as psyched as I was, and we were accompanied by Cat Thomas, the DJ, and another DJ, Rick Michaels, and the mood was giddy as we jammed out to music on the 30-minute ride to the Richfield Coliseum on that warm May day. Several groupies were gathered around the area where the band and buses and VIP guests pulled up. Suddenly, everyone in the limo took notice that from the waist up, I looked exactly like John Bon Jovi, especially with that hair and the leather jacket and the shades, and so Kat suggested that I pop out of the moonroof to give the groupies a show. Think it'll work? Try it, the girls in the limo egged me on. Okay. And I jumped up on the seat so that the top half was showing, and I raised my hand and the three middle fingers in that classic rock on sign, and the groupies went crazy. When I got out of the limo parked, I got out, obviously no longer a man. They started shouting, screw you! I was like, well, I'm about to meet my soulmate, so screw you. We made our way through the melee near backstage. Sound guys and wires were crisscrossing us until we arrived in a large holding room with about 50 other radio station representatives and various guests. I could hardly deal. My skin was crackling with excitement, and I sat with my hands underneath my thighs to keep from biting my nails. We waited. For over an hour, we waited. And I barely spoke to anyone because I was there for me and I wanted to be in my set, my head, preparing. Now Kat, noticing my tension, said, you know, I don't want you to be disappointed if it's just Tico who comes out. Now I loved Bon Jovi for the sum of its parts, and one of those parts was the drummer Tico Torres, but I did not come here to see Tico. No, no, as this thought bounced through my head, I became more anxious. But then I looked down the long hallway that led to the holding room, and there was John walking towards us. I grabbed my camera. It sounds cliche, but it really felt like everyone disappeared, and it was just me and him, separated by only 100 yards. No one had noticed him yet, and I watched him walk towards the room as if in slow motion in tight leather pants and a cut-off shirt. Like all stars, he was smaller than I expected. Maybe 5'8 and thin, and he looked tired. Feel the tears well up, and I pinched myself on the thigh to get it together. When he entered the room, several handlers marshaled him over to us. Apparently, as the concert sponsors, our group got first dibs. Kat and the others stood up, but I remained seated, frozen, and he stopped right at the base of my chair, shaking their hands, looking down at me and smiling. He started to tell a funny story that I can no longer remember, and I sat there, mute. All that practice down the drain. Kat, the DJ, noticing my catatonic state, decided he should step in. This is my friend, Jen. Hey, Jen, he said, smiling warmly and extending his hand out to the one that was holding the camera. Instead of simply moving the camera from one hand to the other, I just dropped it and shook his outstretched hand with my mouth wide open. I didn't even say hi. He looked at me with an expression that read, am I crazy or does she look like me? And then one of the handlers told us it was time for John to move to the other groups, but not before pictures were taken. Anyone want me to take a photo with their camera? Asked the female handler, and I momentarily regained my consciousness to hand her mine. We stood up in a group, the concert winners to his right and me to his left. I felt him put his arm around my shoulder, and I managed to wrap my arm around his waist, and I willed my molecules to remember his shape so I could replay it later. The handler took some photos with other people's cameras, and when she got to mine, she said, "Honey, it's not working." "Wait, huh, what? Your camera, it's not working." "No, did you try that? Honey, I can't make it work, sorry." And then she gave it back and began to corral John to move to the next group. I looked at him, trying to think of something brilliant to say to make him stop, and realized I was not just his female mute doppelganger. "Don't worry," he said over his shoulder as he walked away. "The station can get you a picture." And then he winked at me and walked on. I sat down on the chair and watched the other groups as they showed off their gregariousness. Stupid talkers. Stupid me! Kat patted me on the shoulder in a way that said, "Buck up, kid," and joined the other DJs. I slumped. When John made his way out, that was our cue to leave. Kat escorted me to the place I needed to go to get to my seat, and I turned to hug him. We stayed in touch for about a year, and even though I never got that photo, I'll always think fondly of him. When I got to my seat, the opening band was playing. I can't remember if it was Cinderella or Tesla. And my mom and Margie were there. My mom's face lit up immediately and then sort of toned down slightly when she saw my face. "How was it?" she asked. "It's over. I met him, and he didn't fall in love with me." I howled. "Oh, honey, why don't you just, you know, try to enjoy the rest of the show?" And I sat in my seat, disgusted with myself, and cried and cried and cried. After a couple of weeks, I had to move on. In the 2000s, some friends convinced me to go to a Bon Jovi concert for nostalgia's sake at the Verizon Center. I demurred at first, but they told me to get over myself and come with them. Just before the band came on in the sold-out arena, I thought, what am I doing here? I mean, I still like him. He seems like he's a serious man. He does a lot for charity. He's hardly ever in the tabloids, and he's married to his high school sweetheart. And he's been able to maintain a lot of popularity over, like, 30 years. In fact, I admire him. But really, what am I doing here? And then the lights went down, guitar started playing, and he walked out on that stage, flashing a perfect smile on that beautiful mug, and I was 16 again. Thank you.
Why did the people up there laugh when she said she went to go see him a few years ago at the Verizon Center? He's a multi-platinum artist, and he still looks good. It's not a nostalgia tour. It's good.
It's good stuff. Nothing Bon Jovi does is wrong, ever.
Take that back.
Never.
There's a lot of things. He has an album called Slippery When Wet.
Mm-hmm. Clap, everybody.
Okay.
It's an amazing thing. We all love that album.
Let's hold up the book because we're using the videos and stuff. You want to put it here? We could do this.
Sure.
It's called You're Not Pretty Enough.
Yep.
Lie.
Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is the physical copy of the book.
That's right.
Which is nice, and people can buy this
in
bookstores.
Right. Yes.
But you probably make more money on the digital copy of the book.
Yeah.
So this is a Kindle. You can buy it on a Kindle. It's very easy. You can't get your Kindle signed because it's got this weird, like, plasticky thing on the back. But just meet the author and go, "Hey, that was a really nice book." And remember that moment, and then you don't need an author signature.
Yeah.
So there you go. So why is your book called You're Not Pretty Enough?
So the title comes from something that my ex-husband used to say to me when he was having an affair as an excuse why he was having an affair.
Maybe this is a dumb question. Why is he your ex-husband?
Just for that alone.
You seem to be a very hard woman to be married to. You got a lot of rules, like my husband can't sleep around, call me not pretty enough.
Right. And it's not easy living with
sounds
me
like
under that.
Maybe he was just offering constructive criticism.
It's possible. He was.
Yeah. Did he offer?
I think that's exactly what he was doing.
Did he offer plastic surgery? Because that would have literally been constructive criticism.
That would have been a literal take on that. He did not.
So he's a horrible person.
Yeah.
And now you have... He's a horrible person. And now you have a wonderful book.
And a wonderful husband.
A different husband.
Yes.
Because you... Give it up for number two, everybody.
Love that guy.
I've met that guy. He's a fun guy.
He is.
I like
awesome.
That guy. I didn't meet the other guy. You think I'd like him? I think there's a lot
of
potential.
It's a happy hour. You can all come.
Oh, that could be fun. Mm. Okay, now, he's obviously a horrible person, but you turned something horrible into something very good.
Yes.
In addition to writing the book,
yes.
You're not part of a movement, because that sounds like preachy and stuff, but you're doing stuff in other places with the things that happened to you and trying to make it better.
Yeah.
What a horribly worded question.
I think I know where you're going, though.
Go.
The You're Not Pretty Enough thing, that was also the title of my website, and I just thought people, you know, would find me because they knew that story, and it would be a very small group of people. But it turned out that lots of people found me because they were Googling, will I ever be pretty enough? Am I pretty enough for anybody to love me? And things like that, and it made me very sad. But I thought I had an opportunity, since people were coming to that site, why don't I turn that site content around to help that person that's Googling. And so I worked with area colleges and set up on campus, and I administered hundreds of surveys around that feeling and collected video content from people talking about it too. And that site is now a support system for people who are exploring that in a way that's authentic.
And that's wonderful, absolutely.
Yeah.
That deserves applause.
Thank you.
On a not sad note at all, you should pick up this book because it starts off with the sex papers.
Yes.
The sex papers were drawn by a child. It's her, so it's legal. It's okay. Do you want to explain the sex papers to people?
Yes. So my parents were kind of hippie-ish, and so when my mom was pregnant with my younger
sister...
No, they're
not kind of hippie-ish.
They are.
I've read the
they
book.
Were, they
no, your dad said... No, because we won't get into drug use because we're at the Kennedy Center. They are hippies.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Let's take the kind of right out of there.
There you go.
Yeah, so when my mom was pregnant with my younger sister, I was four, and I asked her where babies came from, and she just explained very honestly. She's like, well, we have to be honest with our kids, and pulled out diagrams and reproductive procedures and our bodies ourselves, and gave me a lesson that I was not ready for. And I marched right up to my room and locked myself in there for about an hour and produced with construction paper and markers a series of paintings that my family calls the sex papers, because like one of them is like a cheerleader cheering and it just says sex on the top. Like,
this is the creator of Glee. That didn't land. Keep going.
Yeah, and there's another one of two people. They're naked, they're smoking cigarettes, and they're just naked, sitting across from each other smiling. Sex. Y'all, it's very odd stuff.
You were four, so you also had a smoking problem at 4 years of age.
Right.
You didn't do this once. This continued. It wasn't just drawings. The sex papers led to more acting out in a very plasticky way.
Yes. I had Star Wars action figures.
You thought I was going to get dirtier. Not yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. This was when I was about seven, so we're progressing, and I just like was obsessed with making them like cling together their plastic torsos and just be like, they're having sex, and like constantly, yeah.
I feel like that's standard. I did that.
Yeah, right. Right. It's not odd, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As soon as I learned what the word hump meant,
yeah,
I was mashing all my Barbies together.
Yes, exactly. I called it mashing your privates. It's a fun little production for anybody that lived in my house.
But the problem with this is not, usually action figures aren't related.
Oh, right. So I did have one pair that my mom, she allowed me to explore a lot of stuff, but there was one pair of dolls that really upset her one day, and I was clacking their plastic torsos together, and she said, for God's sake, Jenny, they're brother and sister. And it was Donnie and Marie Osmond. And I didn't know, but I was like, well, so are Luke and Leah, and they're doing just fine together, so.
Are they doing just fine together? Do you know how that story, he loses a hand?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, at seven, I was not thinking about those things.
You should always be thinking about Star Wars when you're playing with action figures. You still have yet to re-meet
right.
Mr. John Bon Jovi.
Yes, but I feel like it's going to happen. It has to happen.
You're married.
Yes.
He's married.
Yes.
Your hair's a lot calmer.
Yes.
His hair's a lot calmer.
A lot calmer.
He owns an arena football team.
Yes.
When they had a league.
Right, so I should like try out for that team.
Well, I wasn't even thinking
soul.
That, but that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Why? Do you actually want to meet him?
Yeah.
Why?
I want that picture, you know what I mean? Like, I want that picture together, and I want to like... I don't...
Someone in this room has Photoshop and could just make
that's
that picture
happen. That's not the same.
Why isn't it the same?
Because
what do you
it didn't happen then.
You just want a photo of you and John Bon Jovi?
In the moment of me re-meeting him and that...
What about a photo with Jamel?
I would love a photo with
Jamel. Jamel's star is on the rise.
Yeah.
John Bon Jovi's star, not on the downward at all.
Yeah.
He's still a great guy.
Yeah.
I'm selling pictures of myself for the Metro Fair out front after the show.
Excellent.
That's why I put the shirt on.
Excellent.
I also want to say thank you for explaining the sex papers you guys were talking about backstage, and I thought it was cigarette papers that you could also use as condoms.
That can't physically work, everybody. Don't do that at home. This is a recorded show. We don't want to get in trouble with anybody. That physically cannot happen. Anyways.
Yeah, now I'm not sure if you've never seen cigarette papers or condoms.
I thought they were doing new stuff with hybrids, man. It's technology.
None of that's in the book, and you can find the book at many local retailers. But once again, please try to find it online. It's a lot easier to find online. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
No, that's it.
I'm glad I know you. You're great. In addition to being an author, you can see her around town a lot. She performs with this great organization called Story League, and you should go see them, and you should see...
Speakeasy.
He just mentioned the local organization. We get a woo. Story League and Speakeasy, so many great storytelling organizations in the city, and that's actually how I met this woman. I didn't even know she was an author. I'm glad she's an author. She's great. Please put your hands together for one last time for Miss Jennifer Tress, everybody.
Johnny Gray. Thanks, Brandon.
Our next performer recently performed at the Lincoln Theater, opening up for Nick Kroll. You can see him all around the country later, not this month, next month. You can see him in New Orleans as part of the Hell Yes Festival. He's my favorite Washington, D.C. comedian. Is that the right way, Jamel? Perfect. You're on your phone. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the one, the only, Mr. Adam Friedland, everybody. Adam Friedland.
Thank you, Brandon. Oh, man. I don't know how I'm going to make you guys laugh today. This is a diverse crowd. There are people from Arlington and people from Africa, and I need the Gangnam style of jokes right now. I need something to work on a global scale, and... I just have very neurotic Jewish experiences. I don't know if that is translatable. Are there any tourists here today? Tourists? Visiting D.C.? Clap it up. Clap it up. And everyone else, please clap for their terrible planning. our government is shut down right now, and you visited the government, so well done. Little known fact, it's actually a D.C. law, one of those kooky, weird laws that's still on the books. Whenever there's a government shutdown, anything that isn't nailed down, that's just free. You could just take that back to Des Moines or Nairobi, I don't know. This city is basically Costco right now. And it's this store in America. It's very embarrassing. We buy 6 gallons of olive oil and we feel great about our freedom at the same time. Kennedy Center, this is really exciting for me to be performing here actually right now. All the history, let's clap it up for where we are right now. A very regal environment. Is it weird that everyone, you can't see this in the recording, but everyone in the audience is wearing Venetian masks right now. It's strange. Sort of like an Eyes Wide Shut type scenario. I'm a little bit afraid, actually, but I'm just going to keep telling you my hee-haw jokes. Just hope. Thanks a lot, Mufasa, for your... Great being here in the Kennedy Center. I think we're in the smallest theater, and there are about 4,000 people here right now, so that's great. I used the bathroom before the show. There was actually stadium seating in the bathroom. There was a guy selling tickets for the urinal. The urinal was playing Twelfth Night by Shakespeare, actually. It's fantastic. Rendition, Sir Laurence Olivier, 1946, I believe. Right after the war, yes. I don't know, this is kind of a big room. I don't know if you guys could see my circumcision from where you're sitting, but I'm a Jew. I'm Jewish. I'm a Jewish person. I'm not a practicing Jew, as you might have imagined. I believe I've made perfect already. You know, so... But it sucks. It really sucks. There's a lot of pressure, and you don't really get much out of it except for your parents yelling at you. And I don't know. I want to quit sometimes. Like you can't quit. It's like the mafia. You can't leave. In fact, it is the mafia. I tried writing Netanyahu a letter. And I'm like, I'm out, dude. Like, I don't want this anymore. And let's just say he has trouble letting go of things. Or territories or people. Political humor. The whole world's mad at Israel. That's something we can all agree on. I'm just kidding. Mom, dad, granny, grandpa. They are probably watching right now, furious, in their living room in Las Vegas, Nevada. That's where I'm from, actually, ladies and gentlemen. Let's clap it up for our nation's capital, Las Vegas, Nevada. Anyway, as I mentioned, I'm a Jewish, major legacy of being Jewish is the Holocaust, but sometimes your parents like to use it inappropriately, at least in my opinion. Like a couple years ago, I got into law school, and I was all planning on going to law school and being a good boy. And I did like 2 open mics, and I was like, oh yeah, comedy. That sounds like a great career. I'm going to hate myself the rest of my life. Sounds really like a solid investment of time and energy. So I called my parents up. I was like, guys, you know, I'm thinking a lot about my future. I kind of want to explore what's important to me, what feels real, and I want to be a clown, Mom and Dad. I want to be a clown. My mom's like, can you believe it? A Jewish comedian, can you believe it? And I was like, are you serious? Like, are you actually... Like, Whoopi Goldberg is Jewish. Like, technically, she changed her last name to get in the biz, you know, obviously. I saw Larry the Cable Guy at Rosh Hashanah services, actually. All right, that wasn't as funny. So I'm like, yeah, guys, I think, like, I want to be a comic. And my mom just replied by saying, 6 million, Adam. 6 million. They rounded us up into cattle cars, Adam. They treated us like animals, Adam. And I was like, Mom, this has nothing to do with the Holocaust. This is absolutely... And in this scenario, am I Hitler? Am I destroying our family like Hitler? Am I the Hitler of your analogy right now? It's a little bit scary. Let's see. My dad just joined Facebook, ladies and gentlemen. And sorry, I just got a text message from President Obama. It's nothing, no big deal. My dad just joined Facebook. It's kind of weird. I was looking at his profile, and it said interested in men. And I didn't know that. I didn't know. So I was like, Dad, this is serious. I called him up, and I'm like, you know, I support you, obviously. You know, you're a really old man. You've probably been struggling with this for a long time. And he was like, what the hell are you talking about? So I was like, no, on Facebook it says that you're interested in men. He's like, of course. I don't find women to be interesting. I don't know. Boo! Boo! All right, I think that's my time, everyone. I'm Adam Freeland. Thanks a lot.
Adam Freeland, everybody.
Thank you.
Adam is a very regular contributor to the show, and he's a great friend of mine, and he's a great friend of Jamel, and he's a medium friend of Stephanie's, because Stephanie doesn't live here. So I know about this one gig that Adam did.
Yeah.
It's an incredibly odd gig, and it kind of ties back to Jennifer's piece and what I was talking about earlier. So, Adam, what's the biggest room you've ever played?
Well, that would be probably this weekend when I did the Lincoln Theater.
Back, come on.
Room.
Thank you.
The biggest place I
the biggest
ever
place.
Did stand
Thank
up
you.
Was I was about 4 months into stand up, and my friend's like, are you a feminist? And I was like, what are you accusing me of right now? Yes, I'm a feminist, obviously. What does that mean? I guess I'm a feminist. I don't know. And she's like, well, yeah, you want to do this feminist rally, do jokes, like make them laugh. And
what did you say?
I was like, yeah, I'll take the time on stage. I'll take the stage time. Yeah, that sounds great. And so Daniel Tosh, this comedian, just ruined it for all of comedians. Like a few days before the gig, when he made a really tasteless rape joke. And so there was like this kind of battle that was starting to formulate between comedian clowns and feminists. And I was booked for a feminist rally like the next day. And it was like I was walking into just a war, and I needed to get out like safely, unscathed. And so,
how did it go?
So I text my friend. I was like, "Where is it?" She's like, "The National Mall." I was like, "Of America." The whole. And I get there, and there are thousands of people there, literally, and there are members of Congress speaking. And I had been doing stand up for 4 months. And there were people telling really terrible, grisly stories about assault, sexual assault. And now let's listen to your comedian, Adam Friedland. Like, that was my warm-up.
Now, Stephanie, would you have accepted that gig?
No!
Stephanie, for the people that are just listening and not watching, you're a woman.
Yes.
Okay.
Jamel. What are you saying about my vocal tone?
Jamel, would you have taken that gig?
Hell yeah.
Why?
Because I'm every woman.
That's true. Now.
It's going to be hard to top that. We got a little more to do. Okay.
So anyway, I'm like, okay, so I am like, nothing from the act is going in. I'm writing the safest jokes, the easiest jokes ever. I'm sitting there for 2 hours in the beating sun, just decided, like, it was on C-SPAN, like, it was on C-SPAN 8, the OCHO.
So you have a TV credit?
I think I have a TV credit. If someone can dig it up, it's really scary what ended up happening. So I'm writing like simple, like easy jokes they can't possibly disagree with. So I was like, what's the first rule of women's rights? A woman's always right. You know, like, who's going to disagree with that? And then I realized that as opposed to a comedy show, I was at a political rally. So the format of a political rally is sentence, applause, sentence, applause. Sentence, applause. So literally anything I was saying was getting claps. I was like, and I was getting drunk with power, basically. I didn't understand what was happening, why I was getting such a good response. I made a joke about there being a boob on top of the Capitol building. I mean, it was some really high-grade comedy, let me tell you. It was some really great stuff. And then the Washington Monument, they were thinking with their Washington monuments, a lot of that kind of stuff. The GOP or whatever. And so I make my first mistake. So I say, so anyway, ladies, and then this woman in the front row heckles me. She says, we're not ladies, we're women. So I repeat that into the microphone. I'm like, pardon me, you're not ladies, you're women. Biggest applause of the night. Biggest applause of the night. Huge, huge. People go nuts. Off a mistake I made. They didn't even know that someone corrected me because she didn't have a microphone, but I had a microphone. I start going a little crazy and I'm just like, girl power! I am woman, hear me roar! No means no! And then, like, I run away. I ran away. I get my backpack. I'm grabbing my belongings, ready to go. And this woman stops me. She's like, yo! And I was like, what? Like, they're on to me. They know I was not taking it seriously. She's like, yo, no means no. And I was like, right. She's like, that's wrong. And I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, yes also means no!
And I tell my son, he's at college right now, if a woman consents to having sex, that you can't have sex with her.
What?
There's no sex allowed. And I was like, I will always remember this. Thank you. Thank you. This is a beautiful night. All right, goodbye. And then I ran away. And that was the worst gig of my entire life.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
Is that why I'm having so much trouble getting laid? I'm saying yes too much?
Yeah, you have to... No means yes, which means no. I'm very confused right now.
You should leave the stage before we get in trouble.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Adam Freeland, everybody. Johnson.
Bye, y'all.
Stephanie Haas. This is Johnny Grave. Johnny Grave is one of my favorite musicians in Washington, D.C. You can see him out about 20 nights a month because he's a real musician. He plays a lot. We have a show together coming up this Halloween at the Black Hat. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's a circus. He's got some burlesque performers. He's got some guys that shove nails into their faces. It's not hyperbole. They literally shove nails into their faces. And I'll be there saying, hey, look at that guy shove a nail into his face. So, Johnny Grave, I'm really glad he's here. There's a band that's about to set up. Their name is Lenorable. They sound nothing like Johnny Grave. It's amazing. I love them. it's great. I love them. I'm being completely sincere. I love them. Ian, the guitarist in this band, he's an accomplished guitarist. He's one of the best in the area. He's actually got a sponsorship for the guitar that he's playing. He's that good. He is usually my house band on the talk show that we do at the Wonderland Ballroom, and I make him play the music of Sugar Ray. For the people in the room that don't know the music of Sugar Ray, they're not that accomplished of musicians. They have a song about called Fly, and the guy has bleach blonde hair, and that's what people know about them. So I'm glad that he's here. He could actually show his musical prowess. And this is Lisa, and Lisa's an amazing singer, and you're going to enjoy this set. And I'm going to walk off stage with Mr. Johnny Grave. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please put your hands together for your musical entertainment of the night, Lenorable.
Stay with me till nothing's left.
resist the night. Feel the pain that keeps me back. Disconnect. Bleed with me till nothing's left. song of your tears.
Tomorrow, while their eyes grow gray.
Captain. Here, through the dark and the she will come. Bells and dance wish they had sung. She is empty, but she brings pain. In this room, she will repay.
You can buy Lenorable's EP Disconnect on your friendly local websites. It's fun. My co-host, I've always wanted to say this, at the Kennedy Center, could be found on the fourth Thursday of every month at the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois, hosting Comedy Secrets. No one enjoys me saying that except me. I'm sorry about that. Johnny Grave and the Tombstones can be found at the Black Cat on Halloween. It's going to be great. Actual Halloween, not the 27th or the 26th, but actual Halloween night. It's going to be a lot of fun. Jennifer Tresh, she was amazing. You should buy her book, You're Not Pretty Enough. Go to that website. Jamel, our great announcer, can be found this Friday night at the Wonderland Ballroom in Washington, D.C. with his comedy duo, Romaine and Lettuce. It's an R&B comedy duo, and it is amazing. And on Adam Friedland, this is the best plug of the night, can be found this Wednesday at the Wonderland Ballroom hosting Funny Moms. Him and four other gentlemen host a show called Funny Moms. Figure that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks to the Kennedy Center for letting us do this. Thanks to the Millennium Stage. They program excellent stuff here every single day of the year, and it's always free, and it's always at 6 p.m., and whenever they let me do anything here, I'm incredibly grateful. And most of all, thank you guys for coming through, and thanks for sitting through this. I know it wasn't for everyone, and the fact that you made it to this far makes me very, very happy with all of you. These are all people I love. Hopefully some of that spread. Thank you for coming, and have a wonderful night.
Welcome to the Theater Lab for this evening's Millennium Stage presentation, brought to you by Target and the J. Willard and Alice S. Marriott Foundation. As a courtesy to this evening's artists and other audience members, we ask that you turn off your mobile devices at this time. Photography and recording of any kind during the performance is prohibited. The Millennium Stage presents a free performance at 6 p.m., 365 days a year. All of our performances are broadcast live and available on demand at www.kennedy-center.org. Now please welcome to the stage, Johnny Grave.
And I got a woman down in Houston, Bay, Lord, I got three in Spain. Well, I got a girl down in Texas, baby, Lord, I'm scared to call her name. Woman don't love me, baby. No, she don't treat me like humankind. Oh, my woman don't love me, baby. No, she don't treat me like humankind. Well, I asked for what a mama knows. She bring me turpentine. Oh, well, now what you gonna do now, baby, when you find your best man rolled up and gone? Hey, well, now what you gonna do, baby, when you find your best man rolled up and gone? Sit on your bed and yes, you cry, baby, Lord, cry till he come home. Worried, baby. Oh, and I won't be worried long. Well, I've been worried, mama. Oh, and I won't be worried long. I'm gonna drink good whiskey, ride the women's bag home.
Ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Grave, everybody. And welcome to You, Me, Them, everybody live at the Kennedy Center. Yay! Tonight's guests include author of You're Not Pretty Enough, Jennifer Tress, comedian Adam Friedland, the band Lenorable, co-host Stephanie Haas, and house band Johnny Grave, of course. And I'm the announcer, Jamel Johnson. Yes. Now give it up for your host, who is not me, Brandon Weatherby!
Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Johnny Grave, everybody. Johnny Grave. Welcome to the Kennedy Center Theater Lab. My name is Brandon Weatherby. We are going to do a talk show, and it's going to be fun, and we're going to meet new friends, and we usually do this talk show in places that aren't nice like this. This is very odd for us. We're very, very happy to be here, but this is not the oddest room I've ever played to. The oddest room that I've ever played to was when I was 14 years old. I played to a wonderful room, a very warm room, a receptive room. I played to the Divine Infant Jesus Church, everybody. Give it up for church, everybody. So I played the role, very great crowd. I played the role of a criminal. Now, the Passion Play is a wonderful play. I recommend that everyone sees it towards Easter time. Now, the Passion Play is the story of Jesus getting hung on the cross. Now, I went to Catholic school for the duration of my academic career. Though I am not Catholic, doesn't matter. Very, very nice people. I was the only non-Catholic in the school. The only African-American gentleman in our class, his name is Anthony. Anthony and I played the criminals that were hung next to Jesus Christ. Jesus is a great friend of mine, really good friend of mine. He's actually getting married quite soon, and he had a six-pack at 14 years old. He's a very ripped gentleman. He got drafted by three baseball teams and said no to him to work in education. He actually might be Jesus Christ. So there's Jesus, there's Anthony, and there's me, and we walk the crowd with Jesus for about an hour in a church full of people, really nice people. At one point in the play, a very nice woman named Mary wipes the face of Jesus. People don't like Mary because she's friendly with other people. And I had a crush on Mary for the... I'm changing the names because we're recording this. I had a very, very big crush on Mary from the ages of 1 to 14. I'll explain why it ended quite soon. We get to the end. The end. I think everyone knows the ending of this play. I don't think I'm reading anything. We are hung on a cross.
You're hung on a cross because that's how the play must end in order for the act that is not seen to proceed. Mary was very kind enough to disrobe me, which was very cool in a way because I was 14 years old and I wore boxer shorts and it was awesome. Now, I'm not sure if you guys are big fans of MTV Unplugged circa 92, but I was, and I saw the LL Cool J Unplugged, and I was smart enough to know not to wear sticky deodorant so I didn't have those white stains. So I just smelled really bad, sweating a lot after walking those stations. And Mary puts me on the cross, and I feel Mary... We're at the Kennedy Center. I feel Mary do nice things for me on the cross, and I'm in front of the crowd. The crowd. I'm in front of the church. I'm in front of the church of 1,200 very nice people, like I'm in a Creed video, and I'm just standing there with arms wide open, no access to my hands, feet are kind of bound, and I realize I'm wearing boxer shorts, and boxer shorts have a little slit in them. And I'm a proud man. And after you play a church of 1,200 people at 14 years old, and you've shown God in them everything, you can do pretty much whatever you want for the rest of your life, and you'll feel fine. Totally worked out. Mary is currently married to a cop. I'm married to a journalist. I think that worked out better for me. I'm very happy. And now I have this talk show, and it's a fantastic talk show, and you're here, and it's going to be a fantastic time. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, for a really quick time, put your hands together for Johnny Grave while I walk about 10 feet to that desk. Johnny Grave, everybody. All right. This wonderful person that is sitting next to me, this is my co-host. Her name is Stephanie Haas.
Hello.
Stephanie, I agree with the four people that clap for Ms. Haas. She is a wonderful person, and I understand That's that fair. You might not want to clap for her, but I think she deserves a claim. Now, anyways, Ms. Haas and I are friends because of this talk show. She is a wonderful stand-up comedian out of Chicago, but she did not grow up in Chicago like I did. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in rural Wisconsin.
Why?
Possibly Mayberry. I'm not.
What was it like growing up in Mayberry?
There was a lot of fishing. There was a lot of riding my bike around.
Where did you fish?
Where did I fish? There's a little fishing hole down by my house.
Did you actually fish in a fishing hole?
I mean, it wasn't a hole, but there was a little river that I could walk to.
That's nice. Okay. Yeah. So you're fishing. What else are you doing?
Fishing. I'm riding bikes with my friends during the summer. We're going to some good tree climbing spots, climbing as high as we can get. We're swinging around on branches. I would get a dollar every day from my parents during the summer to go to the drugstore and buy candy or baseball cards.
Did you grow up in 1955?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you do not look like you grew up in rural Wisconsin.
Thank you.
By the way, if anyone is offended that we're not you're not in Wisconsin, so don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. Now, we're friends due to stand-up comedy.
Yes.
Why are you a stand-up?
Because I grew up in Mayberry.
Perfect. Now, Jamel's our announcer. Jamel, you're a stand-up.
Yep.
How was it growing up for you?
It was pretty cool, dude. I used to hang out in the urban suburbs of Arlington, Virginia.
How close to Mayberry are the urban suburbs of Arlington, Virginia?
Arlington / Woodbridge, because I got to give them both cred. Woodbridge is in the house.
They're really showing their love of Woodbridge by their by their response.
How was it like? I mean, it was the same thing. Less fishing holes. Same amount of money spent on candy. More looking at girls' butts.
Now, Stephanie,
yep.
A lot of people might think that you also look at girls' butts.
No, yeah, I don't.
And that's interesting, I think.
I just like leather jackets and short hair.
Have you found a pomade product yet? We've had many discussions about pomade recently.
I haven't found a good pomade yet, no.
Jamel, do you have any recommendations for the perfect pomade for a stand-up comedian like
There's
Stephanie
There's only
Haas?
One pomade. It's the Orange Murray's can of pomade, and it's a lady and a dude, and they both have afros. And that's the only way I can describe it. I don't know where it's at. It's everywhere. Sally's Beauty Supplies, who's also sponsoring the program.
Give it up
for Sally's Beauty Supplies.
Thank you, Sally's Beauty Supplies, providing all the pomade for this evening.
She's very funny. He's very funny. And our next performer is also very funny. But she is not a stand-up comedian. Comedian.
Comedian?
Comedian. She's not a comedian.
Because she's a comedian?
That's correct. So, yeah. She's actually a writer, and she's published this wonderful book called You're Not Pretty Enough, and when you see her, you'll think she's a liar.
She's a very beautiful woman.
Thank you. Okay, that's what I was... Wouldn't it be weird if I was like, well, she's really ugly? Anyways, she's coming to the stage right now, and she's going to do a little a reading for us, and then she's going to sit for an interview. Johnny's going to play her on. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for one of my favorite writers in Washington, D.C., Miss Jennifer Truss, everybody. Jennifer, please come to the stage.
Hi, everyone. Well, most of us have had a crush on a celebrity, I think, at one point in our lives, right? Think back to that moment. Mine was Jon Bon Jovi. I was 15 or 16, and I saw that Shot Through the Heart video, and that was it.